You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
Send in your nominations now for the APN Awards. The APN Awards celebrate the best in archaeology, heritage, history, anthropology, museum, and cultural podcasts from around the world. Open to independent, academic, institutional, and network-produced shows, the awards recognize outstanding storytelling, research communication, production, hosting, and more. Award categories include Podcast of the Year, Best Educational Podcast, Best New Podcast, Best Interview, Best Storytelling Episode, Best Host, and several fun APN-only awards for those shows hosted on the Archaeology Podcast Network. Send in your nominations before the 1st of August 2026. Public voting will then be open from the 1st of September to the 1st of October 2026, and then will culminate in a live awards show on the International Day of Archaeology, so October 17th, 2026. Find out all information and send in your nominations through the Archaeology Podcast Network website.
You're listening to The Archaeology Show. TAS goes behind the headlines to bring you the real stories about archaeology and the history around us. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Archaeology Show, episode 334. I'm Chris Webster, and on today's show, I interview Dr. David Danzig from the Save Ancient Studies Alliance, which is putting on a virtual conference this weekend, July 19th and 20th, 2026. Stay tuned for more about that information as we dig a little deeper into the Save Ancient Studies Alliance virtual conference. Welcome to the show, everybody. So it's just me today because I am conducting an interview with Dr. David Danzig of the Save Ancient Studies Alliance. David, how are you doing?
Hi, Chris. How are you doing today?
Good, good. Well, before we go too far, because not everybody listens to the full length of every podcast, and we fully acknowledge that, check your show notes. And there's a link to the SASA website and also to the virtual conference that, if you're listening to this in real time, we're recording this on July 13th, 2026. If you're listening to this in real time this weekend, July 19th, which is Sunday, and July 20th, which is the following Monday, there's the virtual conference. We'll get to that a little bit later, but if you want to sign up for that, if you want more information, if you want to check out the SASA website, please go check the show notes. Just look down at your device. They should be right there in whatever podcast app you happen to be listening to. But before we get to the conference, David, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and what led to setting up the Save Ancient Studies Alliance website?
Sure. So I'm Dr. David Danzig. I got my PhD about 4 years ago from New York University. And all the way along the time while I was in graduate school, I was always confronted by my colleagues and their fears and concerns and worries about what our future careers were going to be like. We wanted to know what jobs there might be for us. And everybody was worried that there was a general contraction happening in the humanities, which is well known, and that our fields in ancient studies were potentially at the tip of the iceberg that was melting away. So we really, there was a lot of concern all around. And from my background in other areas, I worked as a database admin for a nonprofit for a while, and I knew that there were things that you could do if you wanted to aggressively approach a problem in the social arena to try to change people's minds about what they think and feel about something and about how involved they are. So over time, I slowly developed the idea of creating a nonprofit organization that did a lot of different things, all based around educational access, promoting knowledge about ancient studies, and really building the link for people between the things that they love in the world that they already know about that are connected to the ancient past, but that they don't actually know that the source of our knowledge on which these things are based comes from a live community of active people, scholars who study the ancient world in various fields. So this could be, for example, different movies. The classic example is Indiana Jones, but there are so many other movies and video games and books that are based on the medieval past and the ancient past and the Egyptians, the Romans, and everybody else in between. So the idea was to bring together as many people who already shared this passion and to really try to share our passion with the rest of the world.
Nice. Nice. All right. As you go to the website, you see Welcome to Port Ancient. Can you tell me what the origins of that are?
So one of our many projects was Port Ancient. The idea was to try to bring together, to create partnerships with lots of different groups of all sizes. They could be full old school nonprofits with brick and mortar, massive buildings, or they could be just small online projects. The idea being that everybody who is promoting the ancient past, the pre-modern past, in some way, whether online or in person, should be part of a community working together towards our shared goal of making the ancient world more interesting and accessible and connected to different people. So the idea with Port Ancient is to show all of our partners in this way together. Archaeology Podcast Network, of course, is one of our partners. And some of the podcasters on APN are also part of our this group of Port Ancient. And in the future, we're going to be moving this fall towards a new phase in which we're trying to actively bring together this community. So we're planning a gathering, a workshop of all people who SASA has partnered with, and we're interested in inviting other people to come together and talk about best practices and how to reach a wide audience.
Indeed. All right. Yeah, that's, you know, right up a podcaster's alley. We've been running the APN for 11, 12 years now, and it's always trying to find that audience. You know, we feel like we have good content, of course, but it's always just trying to find the right people that want to hear that and can hear it and can do something about it. So what's under one of your menu items in the website is get involved, and you've got donate, which seems obvious, apply to SASA, and volunteer. What kind of opportunities are there for people who want to participate in this? What's under those headers if they choose one of those?
Well, thanks for asking about this. We actually have a large team made up mostly of volunteers. I myself, the executive director, am still a volunteer. And there's a wonderful thing in working in an environment in which everybody's giving their time towards a common cause. There are so many different opportunities at SASA. We operate in somewhat unusual fashion. Our organization is completely online, and it's broken up into about 15 different teams that operate independently to a large degree. Each one of them has a focus area and projects that they work on, and they're headed by a team leader. On each team are volunteers and interns. Interns are usually undergraduates, but sometimes people who are a little bit further advanced in their educational or personal careers. And they run on a 3 times a year cycle in accordance with the U.S. educational system of fall, spring, summer. Those are internship periods. Mm-hmm. The internship program is really great. We have different professional development events for our students, for interns, and we have also events which we call Beyond SASA, when interns and volunteers and other people share with the whole group different projects that they themselves are working on. And because we're all generally interested in the past, and we want to share different research and ideas that everybody's been working on within the group, those have been really successful, and they're a lot of fun. So
nice.
Interns end up on one of our teams. We have our access team, Archeo Gaming. That's a fun project, Archeo Gaming Live, which is live streaming Archeo video game play and talking about it. Continuing education, a creative team, executive, fundraising, grant writing, Inspire, live events, major donor, mass communications, mentoring, outreach, recruitment, research, social media, technical team, and virtual conference. And the virtual conference team is what's been working on creating the conference that's coming up this coming Sunday and Monday, July 19th and 20th.
Yes, and we will talk about that. I'm curious, how many volunteers do you, I don't know if you have this number off the top of your head. I don't even have the one for the APN in my head, to be honest with you. There's so many people that want to help out with different things, but how many volunteers would you say you have?
I think at any given time, we have about 100 volunteers active. So it's been wonderful. I think we probably had over 600, 700 different volunteers over the past 6 years that SAS has existed for. Just a great group of people. And it's been amazing to meet all of these different people and build relationships with them.
Yeah, indeed. So I think my last question about this before we talk about the conference is, what are your overall long-term goals with SASA? What are you hoping to achieve in the long run here?
So the idea of SASA has multiple different parts to it. If you want to go to the About Us page, if you're on our website, you can learn more about the goal. But in particular, we have something we call the SASA arc, under which are the 7 points of our programming are organized. The idea is to, one, harness interest in the deep past to raise awareness for ancient studies as the source of our knowledge about the ancient world, like I said previously. Two, to support formal and informal ancient studies education and learning at all educational levels. So we're talking K through 12. We're not really talking K. We're really talking like middle school through high school, then undergrad, graduate school, public education, and lifelong learning. Three is increasing access and accessibility. We do that by providing free online resources that make it easier to get into ancient studies fields, to find the information that's quality and correct, and be able to foster self-study for anybody who's interested. The internet is full of great resources, but it's very hard to find what's going to be the best and the easiest for you to actually study with and learn with on your own. So we've got some great resources that help do that. And we are also working to bring informal and formal types of education for free to the public, which includes our live events and our reading groups and the virtual conference as one type. As far as I know, there is no other conference within the field we call ancient studies that is broadcast free online with the goal of having as many different people across the world participate and learn from a scholarly group of presenters. Fourth piece is researching. We want to understand why ancient studies fields are suffering, why there are departments that are closing, why people, decision makers at universities, administrators find it that these fields are not worth investing so much anymore in. And this has been a trend for the last decade or more, 15 years. So we have a group that studies this, we call it educational sociology. We're also working on marketing research to understand why this is happening and how fields portray themselves, all with the aim of trying to change that. Next is fifth, community building, bringing together all the wonderful people who are interested in this. And then we support scholarship. We want to re-envision a world in which scholarship is part of a lifelong pursuit for anybody who has significant training in ancient studies and anybody who can generate their own self-study training. And finally, this ends up as advocacy, trying to work with decision makers at different institutions and educational settings to help them understand the value of ancient studies beyond the value of humanities, the value of understanding the deep past of all cultures and making that a priority for students to be able to engage with the cultures, their own past cultures that they identify with and other past cultures, because we really think that it's important for everybody in the world to be involved in understanding and knowing and thinking and learning about the past. Human society is full of so many different cultures that have shared patterns, but also they're very different and unique and individual. And part of understanding how to make the world a better place, to put things simply, to make the world a better place, is to understand other people. And the way you understand other people is by engaging with them. But the human past, we've had human settled society for over 10,000 years since the Neolithic. The human past is full of other cultures who's in some forms that don't exist today. So the more we know about human societies and cultures, the better chance we have for working together on a global scale in a better way.
Indeed. Well, that's all very well said. So check out the saveancientstudies.org website. Head over to that website, or you can, again, click the link in your show notes to check it out. We're going to talk about the upcoming virtual conference on the other side of the break. Back in a minute. Welcome back to the Archaeology Show, episode 334. And I'm here with Dr. David Danzig of the Save Ancient Studies Alliance. And now we're going to talk about the virtual conference that's coming up this weekend. First, how long have you been doing this virtual conference? What number is this, if it's numbered?
This is going to be the sixth conference. We've started in 2021 was the first one. We've had a great run of it. they're so much fun. They're a lot of work and a lot of fun to produce, but the actual 2 days of the conference have been a blast.
Nice. Awesome. And let's get some particulars out of the way real quick. How do people join the conference? Like, what does that look like? It's a virtual conference. So what do they need to do to become aware of when things start and how to join and what kind of equipment do they need to listen to this thing or watch it?
Mm-hmm. So the first step is just to check out saveancientstudies.org or any of our social media accounts on Facebook, TikTok. We even have it up on YouTube, Instagram, and the like, and Blue Sky. And nice. Find out, learn more about the conference. This year's conference is on July 19th and 20th, Sunday and Monday. In mm-hmm. order to tune into the conference, you can RSVP in advance, although that's not required. And then just on Sunday morning, July 19th at 9 a.m. Eastern, we are set up for global worldwide coverage. We do have people checking in from around the world, including Australia and Indonesia. You might be surprised to learn. All you have to do is have a device that you can watch on that's connected to the internet. That's really it. You can mm-hmm. watch directly on our website at saveancientstudies.org/virtualconference. In which you just come to the website, it'll prompt you to go to the right place. But it's also live streaming on any of our social media platforms and on the social media platforms of our live streaming partners for this conference, which include the Archaeology Podcast Network,
Indeed,
Movies We Date, Past Preservers, Melissa in Denial, World History Encyclopedia, Voices of Ancient Egypt, and others. In the past, we've had multiple conferences with lots of other live streaming partners that has made this conference a great success. Last year, we had 16,000 live viewers during the conference. And the year before, in 2024, when we were supported by a grant from the Wenner Gren Foundation, we had 23,000 live viewers. And that's also when we started streaming in Spanish and in Arabic. So in that year, we worked together with a company that did live interpretation into Spanish and Arabic, which was amazing.
That's awesome.
This past year and this year, we had to shift for a lack of funds just doing automatic translation through Zoom. But that is presented in live stream in Spanish and in Arabic on SASA's Spanish YouTube en Español and SASA's YouTube Bil Arabia in Arabic.
Nice. And speaking of funds, what's the cost to join?
Cost? What cost? The idea is that this conference is free to the public. We really want everybody exactly. to be able to experience what it's like to be at a conference. Now, you don't really get the chatting and schmoozing with people in the hallway in the corners part of an academic conference, although we do have
right.
a social hour at the end of the second day, which approximates that. So please, if anybody's mm-hmm. interested, you can sign up and join and talk to me and other people who are part of the conference and some of the speakers too. But the idea is that you just get to come, you tune in for whichever sessions and papers you like. You can take a look at the schedule and the program, and you'll get a full idea of who's talking about what and when. And you get to learn about the cutting edge research that different scholars are doing. Now, part of the idea of this conference is really to support independent scholarship. Let me explain mm-hmm. what that means. Most academic scholars who are active in producing their own research, they work at universities. Some of them are lucky enough to work at research institutes where they get paid to do research full time, but most are professors at universities. And what their job entails is to teach a number of courses each semester in their, sometimes mostly in their field of interest, but sometimes in related fields. Some of these courses can be gen ed courses. Some of them are specific courses in their area of interest for majors and minors. And then part of their time is also dedicated to their own research. So as along with that, depending on what field they're in, most professors or many will attend an annual conference of their specific field, or maybe they'll attend one or two if they have feet in a couple different fields that are related to one another. And that entails usually going to some major city in the US or in Europe or abroad elsewhere in the world. And then being at a conference that's 2, 3, 4 days long in which people sit in the various rooms and you have an audience from anywhere between a couple hundred to five. Mm-hmm. And listening to people, scholars present their research for 20, 30 minutes at a time, followed by a Q&A and then it moves along. So the idea of the SASE virtual conference is to try to recreate that experience for anyone out there who's interested in the ancient past, to do it around a specific theme, and to bring independent scholars together. So independent scholars are people who do not have such positions, meaning they're not paid to be part of a scholarly community, to be teachers, professors, or researchers. But they're still really passionate, and they have training in a specific field. And so what they do is they work a 9-to-5 job on their own, or they have other ways that they support themselves in by putting together other forms of income earning. And then they also dedicate a portion of their working time towards doing research on topics that they've are interested in, that they've already studied. Yeah. And they're able to produce high quality work, research on par with anybody in an academic position. So part of the idea of a future in which ancient studies is thriving is that people do this on their own, but they're also part of a community, because there will never be enough academic positions to be able to support a growing group of researchers that increases over time. However, as the time goes on, and this world, new world we live in, especially in this new AI and internet world, where people have more and more time available on their hands and they're interested in intellectual pursuits, people can be high-level academic researchers on their own as independent scholars. So that's the idea, to bring together this group and show off the wonderful research they do.
And that's really good, too, because, I mean, I've been to a number of academic conferences focused around archaeology, of course. And of course, I, you know, as part of just the archaeology show and just being an archaeologist, we read a lot of journals and things like that. And there's just not a lot of places out there to present your research, right? You know, some of the conferences, probably the biggest one for archaeology specifically is the Society for American Archaeology. And they may have hundreds of presentations there, but still that's hundreds out of thousands and thousands of researchers, right, that are putting together good information and good work. And then that's only once a year. And there's a few other conferences and regional conferences. And then you've got publications, you know, even some of your more well-known publications, they may publish quarterly. They may only have, you know, maybe 9-10 articles in there, or, you know, research papers in there. And it's still just not enough. So it's the more outlets we can have for people to get the information out about what they're doing and what they're finding. Goes back to what you said in the beginning, in the first segment, about, you know, sort of the more we know about our past, the more we know about people in general, and we can proceed into the future. I've always said too, especially as our mantra for podcasting is, and I come from the cultural resource management background, I always tell people in that space, the first 50% of your job is just doing the work. The other half is telling people about it. And a lot of times that's really hard in CRM, because those papers just, they go into a file cabinet somewhere and nobody ever sees them again. So you really have to put in the extra work to make it known and to tell people about it, which is one of the reasons why we podcast. So
I'm right with you on that. I think that's a big piece of the puzzle for SASE, is trying to train. It's not beyond showing the importance of, it's really trying to train young scholars in our fields to share their work and their interests with the public. And it's great that people are so into posting online and people make their own shows on YouTube. But this, to me, has to become a regular part of what being a scholar is. It's not just about generating scholarship and ideas for you and your small community. It's also about sharing it with as many people who are interested.
Yeah, indeed. All right, well, let's take one more break, and then we're going to come back and talk a little bit more about this conference, the theme, and some of the keynote speakers. Back in a minute. Welcome back to episode 334. I'm talking to Dr. David Danzig about the Save Ancient Studies Alliance virtual conference coming up this weekend. And again, if you're listening in real time, this weekend means July 19th and 20th, 2026. We'll address all of you who are not listening to this in real time a little bit later, because I have a question about that as well. But the theme of this year's conference is Fashion Forward, Interdisciplinary Approaches to Ancient Apparel. First off, I'm curious how you guys come up with themes for this. Do you have a whole pile of things and you just kind of vote on them every year? Or is it about how you can get speakers in to actually talk about a topic? Because, you know, there's somebody studying just about everything out there, but can you put together a whole conference about it? Man, maybe not. So how do you come up with these themes, and tell me a little bit more about this and what you're excited about it.
Yeah. So, Chris, it's a combo. We do have a pile of different potential topics that we'd like to talk about. And one of the keys is trying to choose a topic that's going to be interesting to the general public, but also that's sort of current within academic circles. So for this year's theme, talking about fashion and clothing and dress and weaving and how we create the things that would cover us, and then body adornment, and which is also about representation and combines basic human needs with identity and how we show each other things about ourselves. It seemed to be a really great idea. And there are a niche group of archaeologists and historians who, and art historians also, who work on this. And it's actually interesting because some of the different artifacts that are preserved from the ancient past that are most connected to a person and how they existed and lived in their life are actually pieces of clothing. So there are the high level royalty, fancy clothing, like of the Royal Cemetery of Ur, the burial there of Queen Puabi. And then there's the burial clothing and other things that were with Tutankhamun in his tomb. So those are fancy and interesting, and they show a lot of symbolism and meaning. And then on the other hand, we find, you know, regular clothing and even basketry, which in some way connects to this concept of weaving and making things that can be used, but also on the body. And at the same time, scholars have really been working on trying to understand this from cross-cultural perspectives. Fashion studies itself is also really taken off in the last two decades at the intersection of sociology, media studies, cultural anthropology, and ancient history and art history and archaeology. So I always love topics that are truly interdisciplinary, that bring together people studying things from different places across the world and from different spheres of interest. And to me, that's also a great place to attract interesting independent scholars, because sometimes you get scholars who have previous specialty in different fields outside of academia that then they use as their lens towards their academic scholarship on the past. I think that can get very interesting when people bring specialty knowledge like that.
Indeed. Along those lines, you've got three keynote speakers in addition to all the paper presentations. Tell us about your keynote speakers a little bit.
Yeah. So we have a great group of keynote speakers this year. The idea in general has been to each year to get some keynote speakers who are advanced professors in their field and have specialized knowledge in order to attract a wider crowd. So this year we have Loy Llewellyn Jones, who's been working for a long time in the ancient past, and particularly looking at luxury and power in Greece and Persia. He helped put on an exhibition at the British Museum in 2022 about that. And he's a fascinating person, and I'm sure everybody would love to hear from him. We also have Muriel Lee, who is the project director for the Mediterranean Antiquities Provenance Research Alliance. So she works a lot in trying to provenance different artifacts that are held in different collections around the world, and to work with cultural heritage preservation to make sure that artifacts are correctly attributed and returned at times to different places from which they were taken in the past. But she's also worked in her scholarship on different ideas about dress, and it's particularly in dress and identity in ancient Greece. So we're going to hear from her about that. And finally, we have Anthony Tuck, who is a professor at University of Massachusetts Amherst and an archaeologist who's been working in digging in Italy. And at his site, he's found lots of different actual clothing. He was also telling me about how he found the tools and products of making specific dyes from certain types of shells that make different purple and blue and red colors, and how that there were active workshops at this site to dye textiles, to weave and then dye them in specific ways, which is how you make fancy looking clothing. So in hearing from him and learning about his dig and how he's going to connect the actual processes for producing these things with the outcomes and what they're used for.
Excellent. All right. Well, Interestingly, I mean, you can find all about this conference online. Again, SaveAncientStudiesAlliance.org. Click on the virtual conference tab at the top of the screen there. And I'm even looking at the schedule right now, day one and day two. So it starts at 9 a.m. Eastern date time. So if you're on the East Coast of the United States, that's 9 a.m. If you're not, then do the math. Those Australians, that's the middle of the night for them. So good on you for joining. If you're in Australia, maybe you're hitting the later season sessions.
I just wanted to talk about a new program that we've just started and that we're launching in connection with the virtual conference to start providing scholarships for undergraduates
to
attend conferences on their own, academic conferences. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be fundraising for that through the virtual conference to give students a real opportunity to be in person at a conference of, in any ancient studies field, and for specifically for undergrads who wouldn't necessarily otherwise have the funds in order to do that. So there is a section on the ancient studies, on the virtual conference page about this that you can take a look. And we're looking for people to donate and really help kick off young students' careers in ancient studies, provide these opportunities that are absolutely thrilling when you're 19, 20, 21 years old to be able to participate in an intellectual environment like that.
For sure. I remember just about every conference I've been to, I swear, because there's always something unique about them, right? Some sort of conversation you had, some paper you listened to. There's just so much to do and see. And it's definitely recommended that you go, even if you're not presenting a paper, to be honest. I mean, just go to the conference and suck it all in, right? Absorb it and get into that atmosphere. The other thing I really like about conferences, even virtual conferences like this one, is I feel like it gets you maybe excited or re-excited about doing something, right? So maybe you're a little dragging your feet on something, or maybe you're, you know, searching for a topic or something like that, something to study. Conferences are a great way to get those creative juices flowing and to just talk to different people, see people doing things, and make you want to, you know, step into it and do your own thing. So
I completely agree. I come off of every conference on a high. It's wonderful.
Yeah,
really exactly. Pushes me forward.
All right. One last question. Are past conferences available on the website? So if somebody wanted to see what this is all about, are the videos available?
Yes. On our YouTube channel, you can see we have playlists of the past conferences. And this year's conference will also be, all of the sessions will be cut up individually so they can be found online. You don't have to scroll through 8 hours of each day of the conference to find the session or presentation that you're most interested in. And this is part of the idea of making things really open and accessible too. So that this, another piece is that I always felt that on, just like we were saying, on the one hand, conferences are so great and inspirational, but on the other hand, I feel like sometimes they're a flash in the pan and then they're gone. And one way of keeping that inspiration open longer is to tie things into it. One is to be able to watch the sessions later over time. But another thing is something like this, is like the scholarship program, where you're building off of the inspiration of the conference to help people do more and attend other conferences in the future. Mm-hmm.
Well, I got to say, David, I'm really glad that you're putting this on, and that, and I'm super happy, surprised and super happy you're getting the attendance that you say you're getting from the past conferences, right? And I hope we get that this year too, because again, to go back to something like the SAAs or the Historical Society Conference that happens usually in January, I mean, they may get a few thousand people attend that conference, right? But in one room, you can at most fit a couple hundred, and usually maybe 20 or 40, right? And the big papers that everybody wants to see, there's people spilling out the door and standing along the edges. But even then, you've got to rush off to go see something else, and nobody's ever on time in these sessions. So you have to leave, you know, to go do your thing. And it's just it's a whole mess, right? But to have these virtual conferences, and as a representative and founder of the APN, I have talked to some of these bigger conferences before about allowing the APN to help, you know, record some of this stuff and put it online for future use and reference. And it's just been met on deaf ears, to be honest with you. These big ships are hard to steer, and they're just used to doing the thing that they do. And the thing I've heard in the past, which is why I'm glad you guys are getting in the listenership that you are, or the people watching, is they say, well, if we had a virtual component to our conference, nobody would attend. And I'm like, that's simply not true. Like, people attend for different reasons. And there's people that go to the conference that don't even present or ever go to a paper. They go there to see their old colleagues that they see once or twice a year, and to have conversations, and those hallway conversations, like you mentioned. That's what you know, physical conferences have their place for that. And virtual conferences are a great way to sit back in the comfort of your own living room and have a coffee in your pajamas and listen to some fantastic papers. So, you know, you can't do that at the physical ones.
Yeah, I think that's one direction that we really want to try to figure out for the future of trying to create some type of interactive spaces at times during the conference that people can come into and sort of have one-on-one or small group interactions with one another, sort of breakout rooms. But that's not really how we run it now because everybody isn't in one online environment. It's just streamed and you can watch it wherever. But I think we're going to try to work towards that. Maybe that's something we can partner on in the future and try to build to have that type of connective chatting type of atmosphere at the same time or a piece of that along with virtual conference. And I agree with you regarding the other academic professional organizations that they are, I mean, fields are very slow to change and ancient studies has an ancient vibe to it where change is sometimes very slow. But we've been working with different people in some of these organizations. I actually almost forgot. I'd love to say that SASA, Same Ancient Studies Alliance, has been awarded by the Archaeological Institute of America their award for Outstanding Public Service for 2027.
Wow.
This was just publicized today.
Wow. Nice. That's awesome. And congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. It's wonderful. I think it's really a wonderful recognition of all of the volunteers who put in so much hard work into the organization and into the idea that we need to promote and tell as many people as possible about ancient studies and how fascinating it is when you really dig into what we know about these past cultures. So we are trying to work with different organizations, and I understand they work in connection with their constituencies and what they feel is in their best interest. But sometimes they don't necessarily understand what really is in their long-term best interest. And people outside of them, like me and you, have a different perspective on what really might help move their organizations forward. Another thing is just cost, right? To be attend one of these conferences, you have to be a member and you have to pay the conference fee also. And that goes into part of their annual budgeting that brings in a significant amount of money to pay for the conference and towards their overall budget for the year. But there are other ways for them to make revenue, and there might be other ways for them to lower costs for others who want to participate but didn't necessarily afford the full fees. So it's complicated. I think everybody is interested in this on all sides.
Yes. And I've actually gone to some conferences about podcasting. There's a big one called Podcast Movement, and they have a massive virtual component to their podcast. And you pay for that privilege to attend the virtual conference, so to speak, the recordings as they're happening. Right. So, and then also there's another level where you get access to all the conference presentations a few weeks after the conference took place, that when they've had a chance to chop it all up and stick it on the internet. And I think, again, one thing that your conference is proving is that even if somebody like, you know, the big ones like the SAAs or something like that, or the AAAs were to have a virtual component to their conference, yes, it's true. Some people may not attend the physical conference, right? And that could hurt the hotel that they're at, you know, because they have certain room occupancy things that they're trying to, you know, achieve. Mm-hmm. But either way, they may have 20,000 people buy a virtual ticket, so to speak, which might be cheaper, but still covers those costs. You know what I mean? So anyway, it's a whole conversation we could continue to have. But either way, I'm glad that you're doing this. And I wish I could attend both days, but I will certainly be there on the second day this year. And I'm really looking forward to it. So any final thoughts?
Wonderful. We're so happy to have you as a moderator for part of the second day. We're looking forward to that.
All right. Well, awesome. Well, again, look down at your device, whatever you're listening to this on, or go to the website, saveancientstudies.org, and then again, click on the virtual conference tab and see how you can participate. All right. Well, thanks again, David, and we'll see you this weekend.
Thank you, Chris. I'm looking forward to it. Bye.
Thanks for listening to The Archaeology Show. Feel free to comment and view the show notes on the website at www.archpodnet.com. Find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at ArcPodNet.
Music for this show is called I Wish You Would Look from the band Sea Hero. Again, thanks for listening and have an awesome day.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. The Archaeology Podcast Network's chief editor is Rachel Roden. Our executive producer is Ashley Airy. Our social media and newsletter coordinator is Matilda Siebrecht. The APN was founded by Chris Webster and Tristan Boyle on December 1st, 2014. We're supported by our amazing podcast hosts, many volunteers, and listeners like you. Check out membership at www.archpodnet.com/members.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.